You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And David, we have to talk about two stocks now. One is a really big one, a huge one. It's a financial services company, otherwise known as a bank, and it's called ABSA, and they came out with their results. The share price not doing so well, down about 3.75% as we speak. And another one was Metair, which is up 25%. I don't know where that came from, but let's start with ABSA. Let's start with ABSA while you compose yourself.
I've been tracking both of those, and ABSA's results were not good. And when you break them apart, you'll see that locally revenue profits under a lot of pressure. What saved them was Africa, you know, which steadied it. So, I mean, outside of South Africa, you know, they're. Yeah, there are operations outside there. So I think that kind of gave the result a little bit of respectability. But I think what I've asked the chaps at our firm to do, and I do it together with them, is to try and look at the banks and say, okay, where do we go? You know, where would you put your money? Capitec came out with good numbers. And overall, they weren't bad numbers. But I think, Lindsay, what they're beginning to reflect are the difficulties here. You know, ABSA is quite heavily exposed to the mortgage market, to the housing market. And naturally, you would start to expect payments to be delayed. I don't think every person that they deal with, you know, owns a mansion in the richest parts of the country or in Clifton or anything like that. I think they're quite broadly spread. And I think we're starting to see kind of chipping away at the banks and a lot of their you can see the impairment side of this market starting to creep up. It's not working well. And you don't have to be too clever when you go through the numbers, when you go through the economic numbers to see the strain that banks are going to come through. So, I mean, overall, they're holding their own. You know, there's nothing to be worried about. They're well funded, but I think they are beginning to reflect the strains on this economy. And I would say that applies to a lot of other businesses as well.
I've been saying this for so many years. I don't know how the banks do it. They are so well run. Yep. They are so diligent with their balance sheets and whatever regulatory constrictions are put upon them. And they comply with them always. But you're getting blood out of a stone in the South African economy because the very few people that are making a lot of money are their bread and butter. It's not so much. And maybe it is with Capitec, the people that are earning benefits every month and cashing their check in with Capitec and spending a bit of money at a local supermarket or something. But a bank like ABSA, surely at some stage it's going to say, I don't know anymore. We're looking for more and getting less.
I think it applies to so many other businesses. I think if you extend that, and this is, you know, this is what one has, it's not solely to applies to ABSA, but just think of some of the retailers. And I look at particularly Pick and Pay, you know, just discussing ABSA and discussing the companies where you have to expand now, where you're under pressure, you need money to expand. And something like Pick and Pay, who are really reeling, why? Because people are not buying. Yes, a lot of management issues, you know, because Spar is doing well. Shoprite's doing well. So you can't totally apply, you know, blame it on the economy. Yeah. But I think what does come through is that in these kind of circumstances where you do not have an economy to help you, it just drags you further down because you can't get the money or generate the money to do the things that you need to turn it around. So, and the banks are not helping you. Why I say the banks are not helping you? Because they're risk averse. You know what I mean? They're not going to part with their money in an economy where they feel that you're not going to pay them back or there's a big risk that you might not pay them back. So I think, you know, I'm quite concerned, and this is nothing new that I'm expressing to you. I'm just saying when you actually break those results apart, you actually, you start to get concerned about where we're going. And we haven't, you know, we're down, hey. The JSE is down 4-5% this year. We're not up. You know, we're not in positive.
In rand and dollars, both, yeah.
Well, dollars, it depends on where we were. You know, it's only 2 months. I mean, but if we go back a long time, if you go back to the beginning of last year, yeah, then in dollar terms, you know, we're under quite a bit of pressure. So it's not easy times. Yeah, I'm sure there are little businesses that are doing well, but I mean, overall, it's I think they're tough times ahead.
Okay, yes, the banks. So in summary, I mean, we're using Absa, and I'm not singling out Absa because I bank with them, and it's a legacy issue with me. I bank with them because I started an account with them, God knows, 2 decades ago or something, and I can't be bothered to change because I have to fill in so many forms, which I can't stand. And you'll be sympathetic to me about that when it comes to signing up someone new at Sasfin Securities for an account. But if you had to choose a bank, which one would it be? Probably FirstRand, I would say.
Probably FirstRand. Standard Bank are doing okay. Nedbank, they're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at what we don't recognize and understand, and we can go all the way back to the bottom of 2020 and say, oh, the banks have crept up from there. But, you know, if you go back 5 years,
yeah,
you're no better off than you were in APSA. You know, if you bought the shares 5 years ago and you've held them in a portfolio and a lot of pension funds and a lot of longer-term investors would have had a holding there, you're no better off. I know we collapsed in 2020 and clawed our way back as economies began to repair themselves. But, I mean, okay, so then, right, I won't go back that far. Even if I go back 3 years, you're still in the same position.
They play dividends, though, don't they? They pay dividends.
They do. They pay nice dividends, you know, and if that's why you want to buy them because you're getting a nice return of cash, okay, I can live with that. I've never been a person who buys shares for dividends. You know, I'm saying if I'm going to take that risk, I'd rather go, you know, it's not why I'm in the market. Then I can go farming or go live in the coast and just collect dividends. But it's never going to make me rich. You know, dividends are not going to make you wealthy.
So
you pay 20% on them.
When do people who – and you know, we've got a friend. I'm not going to mention his name now because this is a sort of slightly negative connotation to this question. When do people realize that they've just got to forget about it? It's the blood out of a stone thing. I mean, you can have as many dividends as you like and the economy's going to do this. And look at what happened 50 years ago over the years. Look at the cycles, etc. But when are they going to say, banks are great. Banks are fantastic. They're beautifully run and they're lean. They've cut all their excess costs out from the 1994 onwards for 5-6 years. They've got rid of all that. But if people are not earning money, they don't transact in a bank.
Nah.
When are they going to say?
That's what I say.
It's not.
That's exactly.
It's not going to happen.
You make money in growth economies.
Yes.
When economies are growing, when people feel confident about what lies ahead, and they borrow money and they plot, you know, literally put it into the ground and they do things and build factories and take risks. You know, that's what I like about the market, and that's why I'm always theme-driven. I say, okay, what are those themes? You know, what are driving people's interest and where the companies are making money? And I've become quite cynical now. By cynical, because I look back 5 years and I look, there are a lot of big houses in South Africa that have huge holdings in things like British American Tobacco and maybe AB InBev. And I say, why? You know, people don't smoke anymore. They don't even puff on vapes anymore. You know, yes, I know these businesses are making lots of money and they're paying dividends. I say, but who wants to buy a smoking company? You know, or even, yes, we love booze and we love to have a beer here and there. But there are thousands of different brands. You know, how do you ever make your brand? How do you get pricing power and the power to actually grow your brewery, you know, beyond, I mean, to make it a very attractive type of investment? So, I say the same thing with banks. Yes, in booming times, when people are growing their incomes and getting rich and they want to buy houses and they want to, you know, they want to do things with their money and they want to buy new factories or whatever, yes, that's when banks really make money. And that's how they always have made money over time. You know, they've been the facilitator to allow, to fund businessmen. But you know, where you're paying someone's credit card because they're going to the shops and buying bread or something, you're not going to make money.
So what you're saying is, I mean, the bigger picture and not focusing so much on banks is that you look at a company like ASML, which has giant barriers to entry, that the business that they're in. You maybe look at NVIDIA and say that they're way ahead. I mean, people will come in the future. But you look at companies where competition is not barred, but it's going to take them a hell of a long time to get to the level that this company that you've invested in is at the moment.
Always, there's always action. And in this, you know, there's always something happening. And that's what I enjoy about the market. You know, I enjoy looking for those. But yes, it was in China, we lost there. You know, I mean, but there are areas sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to lose. But I mean, I look at British American Tobacco. It's done nothing also for 5 years. You know, if you bought it 5 years ago, you're where you are, but you've got, why are you holding it? So I battle. I fight a lot. You know, people. I get a lot of counter arguments and so on. But if you know, when I look at local portfolios and I look at a lot of the big names in this country, and I analyze their local funds and even their balance funds here, etc. Lindsay, they've lagged. They've lagged the global market by big,
terribly in rand terms and dollar terms.
Big way.
I mean, it's huge. And one day they'll say to you privately, when you go and have a glass of wine or something with them, and say, "We had to do it because this was my mandate. I have to invest in local stocks. That was my portfolio." And all the other people sitting at the desk across the room there are doing so well, invested in the MSCI and the S&P 500, etc. But I think they're apologetically patriotic. Is that the right thing to say?
I don't know. Probably, but they've got a lot of salespeople out there who are pushing their products onto unsuspecting buyers, you know. And I promise you, it's quite extensive. There are millions of salespeople out there, you know, who represent big institutions here who are selling funds. You know, and when you analyze them, you just shake your heads because they got great advertising campaigns. They make they go around and put their monthly statements out or their monthly newsletters out and so on. But I mean, the yields have been appalling, man.
Pathetic. I mean, in isolation, and also compared to other investments. So that's what opportunity cost, I think, is the phrase we're looking at here. It's the opportunity cost. Yeah, your inflation's, let's say, averaging 6%, and you're getting plus 3% in rand and minus 7% in dollars or something. I don't blame them because they have to do it. That's their mandate. That's what the big institution, the chap at the top of the ivory tower, does it.
But I want to say, it's my wife, who's lived with me. We've been married for over 50 years.
Goodness me.
God forbid I go. Yeah.
Plus, she's put up with you for 50 years.
Yeah, that's with me with her.
Please, Linda. The only reason you're saying that is because she's on a plane to Australia at the moment and she won't listen to this until much later.
She's got to make sure she gets on tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Anyway.
But I mean, you know, she lived with me, and she and some smooth-looking salesman came from one of the investment banks.
Yeah.
You know, after I've gone and looked at my money, said, "Oh, okay, give it to me." I promise you, she wouldn't know A from B. You know, she would be happy, and for years and years, she'd be happy that her funds are being looked after. She would never challenge the returns and so on. And I think it happens to so many people around this country who glibly accept that, because these are qualified people or so-called qualified or experienced salespeople selling products and everything. Yeah, I know. And
they're idiots.
And you realize what it takes to understand the market. And I'm not saying I do, but I try. You know what I'm saying? And I know how difficult it is putting the effort that I put in and saying, you know, unless you do that, you know, unless you're prepared to do it, don't even enter this game. Unless you're prepared to do all the kind of reading that you can do and follow the companies and so on, don't bother. You know, and it's not fair of you to go and sell things to other people. That's my gripe today. I just, you know, why I say that is that when I'm just going, funny enough, I'm just doing a portfolio at the moment and reviewing it where where one of the clients got a small local portfolio, and I look at the yields, the returns that have been made, you know, over years on this versus what's happened offshore. It's just no contest. It's just no contest.
There are a few of you left, David. I'm just trying to think of people like you. I mean, people like Pete Fulyun, who's a character. Yeah. At least he can articulately explain his stance on these deep value shares that he goes for. And there's Wayne McCurry, the same thing. And there's you, and you're in the completely opposite direction to both of those people. But they're dying out now. You've got some youngsters in their late 20s, 30s coming in. And do they really understand? I'm not sure. I don't know. Anyway, we're going off on a I'm going off a tangent just for a change. Metair, what happened there? 25% up. You know, how can a share go up 25% in one day? For goodness sake.
It can, because it's fallen dramatically over the last couple of months.
Give us the figures if you can. And while I natter on, you're going to put up a Metair chart and say, well, it was here 3 months ago and now it's here today.
Now, I remember. Okay. Yeah. I had my Schitt's Creek portfolio. Mm-hmm. A few months ago, I said, hold on a sec. Here are some companies that we can make a lot of money from. You know, they've been absolutely hammered. And I bought one of them was Metair. And
very good.
From the minute I bought it, it ran up, you know, from about, I can't remember the exact time, from about 15 odd rand all the way up to, who knows, you know, 18, 20. It was up like 30-odd%.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it just collapsed.
To where?
And I can't remember the exact details.
When you say collapse,
you
bought
collapse.
It at 15. I mean, we can argue about that.
And it went up to 18. 19, and then it went down to 10. Okay.
Oh, blimey. So you lost a third of your money.
Yeah. And now that's why after the results that came out today – there were a lot of concerns about, you know, it supplies parts to original equipment makers or, you know, to the motor industry. And remember that they went through a very tough time, particularly. This came out of the Toyota family, Metair. These were, they made parts for Toyota here. And manufactured a lot of the things that go into motor cars, a lot of the equipment and a lot of the engineering that goes into motor cars. And of course, what happened with Toyota? Remember the floods?
Yeah.
So in Durban, which meant that there was no manufacturing, there were no new vehicles being manufactured here or assembled. So it hurt them dramatically. They're also in the battery side of it. They've got the factories in Turkey as well. And that's also an area that has come under a lot of pressure.
It must have been whacked a lot by the demise of the Turkish lira, I would have thought.
All of these issues have just kind of converged to knock the share price as well. So I think things are starting to turn around. And you could see from a loss last year, the numbers were up a bit better. I've got to do a lot more reading into it. I'm not, you know, I haven't gone through this. I like the company. I've known them for a long time. Yeah. And I've followed management there. But I think this is just reaction from a very, very oversold and hammered position, you know, that they've bounced up. They're still far off the levels that they were a few months ago.
So where is it now?
You know, so. Let me give you where they're trading.
Yeah,
I haven't got I'm trying to guess the numbers here. I haven't really looked at the chart in great detail, but I mean, they're now trading at 12 Rand. So 12 Rand 30, you know, so that's from 10 Rand odd. But I mean, they were dramatically, or significantly higher a few months ago. I think, as high as, I'll put a chart on now. Yeah. As high as 20 Rand, which was in November.
Right.
So from 20 Rand down to 10 Rand, that's the fall they had in 3 months, and I've subsequently come back. So a big sell-off.
Okay. I was going to say very good.
I like it. I need to do more work on it. You know, I need to do more work and read out exactly what happened. It was always owned by the Vessels family. I think, I don't know if the family is still involved in the business today. You know, the Vessels were partners of Toyota here, and with the family behind Toyota. in South Africa.
Okay, so, anyway.
That's Metair.
That's Metair with the Turkey. I always think of Turkey when I think of Metair. What about Blue Label, David? We've spoken so many times about this company. It was such a dynamic company and probably still is, but maybe got a bit ahead of themselves. South African companies tend to do that. They get ahead of themselves and say, well, if I'm successful in South Africa, I'll go to Australia.
Yeah.
That sort of syndrome.
Yeah. You read, in fact, I think that story that Duncan MacLeod wrote.
I sent it to you, right? It was on
you sent me to
Fin 24 or something.
I didn't know about it. And good for, you know, Duncan actually went through the results.
Yes.
And he picked up something. He said, what is this? Mm. And he confronted the company. They were completely honest with him. They opened up and said, and a decade or so, you know, we had gone into India. The company didn't want to back us. I hope I'm getting this right. Yeah. The company didn't want to back us. We wanted to, so we stood surety for, you know, for the business. And, of course, that business failed or has lost a lot of money. I still think it's on their balance sheet. But the two little the boys are in for, according to that article, something like $69 million each, you know, which is owed actually to Blue Label, I think. I don't think it's owed, you know, it's owed. And they've agreed to pay it up. I don't know the full implications of that, but that's a lot of money, you know. And it's a kind of, you know, sometimes, and you mentioned it, South Africans, sometimes we just go into areas in which we don't really know. The construction companies into Australia or into the Middle East, you know, retailers all over the world. And I think sometimes, you know, when we play away, we get hurt.
Interesting. How was your weekend of reading, David?
You know, there wasn't much new that's coming through.
Okay.
I think a lot of it is around politics. It causes so much discussion. It's people get heated, you know. I listened to Biden. I was quite impressed by his speech.
He was superb. He barely stammered. I mean, he talked a little bit too quickly because of historical stammer that he has. He's probably been taught by a voice therapist to say just go on, and it doesn't matter how quickly you talk. But I thought he was quite dynamic.
Well, I think he needed to do that and to try and gain support. I don't know. I hope it can last until the end of the year. But at least he had a kind of there was a moral path that he was following. Or yeah. I thought so. I think he came across well in those respects. But where you get on the other side and you start to speak to the pro-Trump support, you know, they hammer you. And you can get very heated. And sometimes people make – you know, it's like I travel to New York often. And where we stay is one block away from Central Park. I go into Central Park all the time. I run through there every morning. And what annoys me is when people say to me, oh, there's crime around the world. Just look at Central Park. I said, there's nothing wrong with Central Park. You know, there is no crime there. If you choose to walk through Central Park at 3 o'clock in the morning by yourself, well, expect some kind of trouble. You know, I'm sure wherever you did that. But I've gone in New York, I promise you, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. You know, yes, there are certain areas which you might want to avoid. But I've never felt any kind of issues. You know, certainly coming from South Africa, I mean, that's a big statement.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't feel threatened. So I can't stand it when people start to make those kind of comparisons. Oh, you know, Central Park, oh, New Yorkers. No, it's not. You know, it's not.
It was in the 70s. It was in the 70s. Oh, and who was the mayor that cleaned it up? Not Dinkin.
Giuliani.
That's it. Rudy Giuliani, who's now become a complete freak.
Freak, yeah.
Yeah, he's
Lindsay,
he's
you know what? Where you've got 10 million people.
Mm.
But when you've got 10, 11 million people that move into the city, out of the people, of course there are going to be some people that drop, you know, pieces of paper. You know, if you look on the side of Central Park, you get a lot of tourists that are coming from Eastern Europe, wherever, smoking areas. You know, people who smoke, not necessarily Americans, say yes, and they put their stubs down. But where you're getting those kind of people coming in. I can imagine Rome and Paris and all these touristy areas have the same issue where people come in from, you know, to have a look at the sites and drop paper and do things and don't, you know, adhere to the cleanup standards. It's going to have London, you know, who knows?
London, so, I tell you what, I wouldn't walk in London after the pubs have closed at 12:30 or 1 o'clock or something. Yeah. I was talking to a friend a couple of days ago, and she's moved with her family to London, and she says, I don't know how you do it. Because strangely enough, she sings in a choir, which is highly regarded, and so she goes to sing at various events, etc. And she says, "Yeah, I walk to the tube, etc. I don't feel threatened." I would feel threatened in London because of the knife crime, etc. Yeah. Certain parts of London. I mean, I know London very well, having lived there all my life. But I wouldn't. I don't know. As you get older, you become a little less. You become a little more, rather, risk-averse. You're obviously not when it comes to your investing, but and you've done so well out of it. But I don't know. I want to live somewhere safe.
No, I know. I certainly think in New York, or certainly around the areas of which are where we walk and go and, you know, hang out, I never feel any kind of threat. And even if I go through to Times Square, which is packed with people, with tourists, you know, there's huge number of policemen around there just hanging around. I never feel threatened. You know, there are people who dress in the nude and paint their bodies, and, you know, that's like, it's like a clown show. No, it's like, you know, you get all those chaps showing off, you know, like people showing off and painted in American flags. I mean, but it's fun. No one takes any kind of offense. On the side, you can get fake bags of every kind. You know? You can get – it stinks of marijuana. You know? But I never feel any kind of threat that somebody's going to – you know, like here or anything. I never felt anything like that there.
I love New York, David. I really love New York. It's just beautiful. When I first started going there, the Lower East Side was a no-go area. Mm-hmm. Now it's been gentrified, and the Upper West Side is as it's always been. That's just fantastic. And Central Park. Mm-hmm. I did a documentary where I sat in Central Park and we filmed there. It's just the most vibrant city in the world, I think. Yeah. And that's me being a Londoner.
Yeah.
It's great.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so Meteo, it's gone from a low base, up 25% today after its results. Abs are not doing so well. And that's quite a big move for a big company. So let's now move on to important matters. Arsenal fans were the only winners yesterday because Liverpool and Manchester City drew 1-1 in what I have to say was a terrific game between two of the best teams in Europe, if not the world.
Yeah. I was impressed with Liverpool. I thought they really played well. They never stopped running. I love Diaz.
Luis Diaz, you love him. Okay.
He's the ugliest man I've ever seen.
Never mind his looks. What about his football abilities? Yeah, you must admit.
Wonderful. He never stopped running.
I know.
And his ball control. Yeah, he messed up a little bit in front of the goals.
Yes, he did.
But he terrorized Man City. He absolutely terrorized them. And I just love his attitude. You know, his parents were there. Remember, his dad was kidnapped.
Yes, he's still there after about 6 months now.
They showed his mom and that. Yeah. But he's an incredible player. You know, I just think he's like, for me, he was like the heart of of Liverpool. Just never stopped. You know, so I did love the game. I must admit,
it was fantastic.
You know, when I watched the other derby last week, which was Man United, Man City, it was just all over the place. It was, you know what I mean? In this case, both teams had opportunities. And, credit to Liverpool. I thought they'd be swamped. I really thought they'd be outplayed by the Fodens and the. Did you see De Bruyne?
When he was taken off, when he was substituted. Goodness me, he was furious.
And Pep had to come and put his arm around him, and he was still moaning and groaning. I don't know what about, but anyway, I'm sure the story will come out.
It was strategic. But, I mean, the fact is that Liverpool were on top, so they had to bolster their defence and bring on Kovacic, or whatever his name is. The ex-Chelsea man. So, yeah, that's it. But I thought it was a very unusual substitution. I would have left him on if I were in the luxurious position of being the Man City manager. But anyway, it's great. Okay, so we've got Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool. I think we've got 10 games left or something, maybe even less. And who's going to win, David?
Yeah.
Who's going to win the league?
I can't say. I think City will come through because of the just they've got the – first of all, they've done it before.
Yeah.
They're as hard as anything. And I think they substitutes, you know, just who's ever on the bench. They've got such depth that they can change their plans so quickly. Yeah. You know, I don't think any of the other teams can do it. They're still a very, very good team. So I wouldn't count against them. I wouldn't – you know, when you see who's there and who they can bring on, it's quite remarkable.
Yeah, you're quite right.
I would give it to City. And then Arsenal and Liverpool could be a toss-up. I don't know. I think Liverpool would have the edge on Arsenal. And Arsenal still have to play Man City. They've got to play Spurs. They've got to play Aston Villa.
Spurs won 4-0 over the weekend. It was very good. Anyway, it's all very fascinating. David, thank you very much indeed for your time, as always, on a Monday. David Shapiro is from SasFin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.